Carol and I first got to know Steve when Steve was running youth for New Wine, but now he's an old man, so you couldn't possibly run youth anymore at New Wine, could you?
No energy.
Would you not like to go back and try and get thousands of them hyped up and excited about Jesus all over again?
I'm speaking there this year.
So are you doing youth as well?
Yeah, I am, yeah. I'm doing
I know you're doing some seminars and stuff, but you're doing youth on top.
Yeah, cool. I'm going to be in trouble.
We were also privileged to be there when kind of Steve spoke in the main arena, and kind of God miraculously kind of provided the finance to kind of move Sozo, the project that Steve and Diana are now involved in South Africa, kind of onto the next level. And it's been great to kind of hear about that story. Some of us kind of received Steve's blog and kind of the updates about going on. Some of us gather together for Mission Prayer Meeting and pray for you every month.
Thank you.
Faithfully, we do, honestly. And it's great because we get information from you. Not always true of all the people we pray for, so it's really helpful. And it's just kind of nice for us all to hear a bit more about what God's been doing in South Africa. Yeah. So just a really warm welcome. Can I pray for
you? Yeah, I'd love that.
Lord, just thank you for bringing Steve and Diana to us today and for their children. And thank you for all that you've been doing in and through them, Lord, in South Africa. And we want to pray that you would, Lord, you'd speak through them to us today. Amen.
Amen. Amen. Thank you. That's great to be here. And it's lovely to come somewhere where people know your name and know what you do and remember the names of your kids and remember what your wife does. And that kind of is a great sign of a church where people do read what you send out and pray for you. So it was so nice to be welcomed so warmly by you this morning. And thank you for supporting us. We always say where we go that the stories that we would share or the stories that we have the privilege to share really are your stories as well. They wouldn't happen without your support. And I genuinely mean that. We'd be back at home in Essex if we weren't supported by churches and by individuals. So these stories become your stories. They become your church's stories. And I believe more than that, they may inspire you also to some new stories in your own area and in your own in this area that we find ourselves and that you find yourselves. I'm amazed by this text, by this passage. I resonate with these kind of experiences of the disciples where they probably don't have a clue what Jesus is doing. You know, time and time again, they just get caught out by Jesus. They really don't know what he's doing. I'm sure most of the time, they don't actually even know who he is properly or even whatever that means. You know, when I first went to Bible school or Bible college, one of the questions that they had for us is, at what point did the disciples become Christians? It's a good question, right? At what point did it... And we all thought we knew the answer. And then we had about 10 different answers in the room, right? So you've then got this big debate, this big discussion. At what point did the disciples actually become Christians? Did they understand who Jesus is? And there's this ongoing revelation of who Jesus is. And I want to say to you for us that there's been a wonder as we've looked upon Jesus and as we've had an ongoing revelation of who Jesus is. We've been struck with wonder. On many occasions, we've been struck with wonder of what Jesus has done. As Chris said, there were times right at the beginning of this journey for us where we literally, and many of you would know these stories, where we couldn't believe what God was doing, where we were struck with wonder at what God was doing. And the disciples who have the privilege of going with Jesus here are clearly suddenly shocked and taken by surprise on who Jesus is being revealed to be by God and the impact of what he's about to do. And then interestingly, I deliberately carried on a few verses to where, you see, these headings were put in later, but to where the heading breaks in my Bible, I deliberately carried on for a couple of verses because there's something private going on where the disciples are struck in wonder at what Jesus is doing. And then Jesus comes and meets a large crowd again. And then publicly, we are told, as soon as all the people saw Jesus, they were overwhelmed with wonder and they ran to greet him. They were overwhelmed with wonder and they ran to greet him. My question is, when were you last overwhelmed with wonder with what Jesus was doing? When did it really overwhelm you? When you actually stopped and you heard a story or you heard maybe someone in church, one of your friends just gave you an insight into what God was doing in their lives. Or maybe you reached out as a church and you tried to do something new and you thought, you know, deep down actually, if someone had scratched your surface, you thought, this isn't going to work. And it does. And God shows up. When was the last time you really were in prayer and you felt overcome with wonder? And suddenly the magnitude of who Jesus is. That's what's going on here, both privately and publicly, it seems. People are literally growing in their revelation of who Jesus is. It sounds very tough that we live 6,000 miles away and we live overseas and we work in a very tough neighborhood, and I understand all of those things. But I'll be honest with you as well, we live 5 minutes from the beach. Okay, so there is some flip side to living 6,000 miles away. Okay, we live with 9 months of summer, and we live 5 minutes from a beach. It's a surfing beach, and I can't surf. I'm one of these people. I like watching surfing documentaries, and I think I like the idea of surfing more than I like surfing. So I like the idea. It looks very cool. Caleb is a very good observer of surfing. We sit together and we watch surfers very, very regularly. We have our own coffee spot where we sit out and we see what they're doing on the back line. We see what they're doing on the front line. He's going to be dangerously good in the future. I can tell already, because he knows what to do. In his mind, he's already nailing it. Okay. But when you go out there are sharks that come in there. It's not whether there are great whites there. It's how close they are to the beach. And I asked the shark spotters once. You go up to a high spot on a road, and I said to them, how often do the sharks come in? And he laughed. He said, well, that's why I'm sitting here. He said, they're always in. I said, okay. What do you mean they're always in? He said, they are always here. He said, there are sharks always underneath these waters where you're surfing and where people are. He said, really, the alarm just gets raised depending on how close they come. And I said, okay. He said, how close could they come to somebody like me? And he said, oh, a shark could swim into your knees. Now, I'm 5'6" and a half. That means they could come into your ankles, probably, okay? If they're coming in at my knees, they're coming in at your ankles, right? And then there was a further revelation of the ocean that I had when the family, Caleb and Isabella and Diana and I, we went to the aquarium. And I obviously made the mistake that every father makes. I tried to save money. So Diana goes at the thing and says, we really need to buy the annual pass because we'll save on a few trips. And I said, an annual pass to an aquarium? We're only going to come here once. No, no, no. You need to come here at least 3 times for the annual pass to be in. So no, we won't do that. I think we've been about 5 times now to date. So I'm well and truly in the wrong. And every time we go, and even now, she's smiling at me and saying, I told you, we should have bought the annual pass. And the reason we love to go to the aquarium is because we live by the sea, but we don't really understand what goes on underneath. We only really see the top. We drive past it. To be honest with you, don't go there hardly as much as we should. And all we see is the top of the ocean. We watch the ocean. We watch it from afar. And we see the top of it. But when you go to the aquarium, you have this sudden revelation of what is going on underneath what you can see. Underneath what's happening, and all of the complications of what goes on and how it links together and all of the different fish and from tank to tank to tank, you can walk around this amazing aquarium. You can see sharks in there. They're not great whites, but you see sharks in there. You see these huge, huge fish, huge fish. See kelp forests, stuff I'd never knew existed. And as I was standing there, I realized that we were so fascinated by the aquarium because it was almost as though we live next to something, but we never really understood it. And it's almost as though we know Jesus, but he constantly there's constantly more to know. There's constantly more to wonder. There's constantly more than we would ever be able to ask or understand. We ourselves need to become, again, overwhelmed with wonder. We need to, if you like, almost go back to the aquarium and realize that which we've been looking at every day, that which we think we know, that which we understand, we need to walk around again the scriptures to read again the time with Jesus again and realize, wow, I didn't ever see it like that. I didn't ever think it meant that. Oh, I missed that. I'd miss that. It's so sad when we think we know and we understand it all. We really don't. If we thought we had it all nailed down and we understood God, I'm very happy to tell you I do not understand God. Don't understand the fullness of God. Don't understand the fullness of what Jesus did. I think in part I understand. As if I'm looking out into the distance at a hazy shoreline. I think in part I understand. I think in part I've even been on a board and experienced some of what God can do. But I'm utterly convinced when I read scriptures like this, when we've been involved in what we have been, when we go from church to church, I'm utterly, utterly convinced there's so much more of Jesus for you. There's so much more for you. There's so much more of God for you. There's so much more that is good, that is an adventure, that is will involve some risk for sure, but is exciting. It is risky, I suppose, to get on a surfboard where you know there are sharks that could easily kind of come and pay you a visit. But yet every morning there are hundreds of people that go out onto the sea and take that risk. Why? Because they're hoping for that one wave. They're hoping for that one wave to come where they hit it perfectly, where they're able to stand up, where they're able to feel the adrenaline rush it is to ride that one wave in and come to shore. The whole idea, really good surfers drop off, paddle back out and come back again. The bad ones like me hit one wave, know that's all you're going to hit all day, and ride it all the way into the shore and hope as many people as possible see you and then eventually fall off onto the sand, right? So, but I want to, when you look, when you stare into Jew, when you stare into God, when you hear stories, and we'll tell you some stories from stuff when you steal them, it should disturb your routine. It should disturb your daily routine, your here and now, everything that your kind of rhythm and routine of life. It should disturb you to the point where you say, well, if that's what it is, if that's who Jesus is, if this is who God is, then what does that mean for me? Then so what? What kind of God is being revealed to you here? What kind of Jesus is being revealed to you here? And so what? It should draw us with wonder. There was a Jewish rabbi who wrote this. He said, the perception of glory is a rare occurrence in our lives. We fail to wonder. We fail to respond to the presence. Life is routine, and routine is resistance to wonder. I wonder if just your routine, you're here and now, you're waking, you're working, you're making enough money to pay the bills, your sense of kind of getting the kids to bed, reading the books, getting the stories done. Believe me, we've got two small kids. We talk about routine a lot. And I'm not anti-routine because I understand it. But I wonder whether in that just the relentlessness of that routine, we sometimes need moments like this where we are forced to pause, where we come up to worship, where we gather together in community and we say, wow, that kind of Jesus? Wow. When we are overwhelmed, when we see what he's done, when we hear testimonies of what he's doing all over the world, we say, that kind of Jesus? Wow, I'm overwhelmed. I'm overwhelmed with wonder. Some of you won't know what we do. As you can tell, I talk a lot. That was just my introduction. I have no clue what time you stop. I don't have a clock. I probably need I'll grab my phone in a second. Were we able to show the clip of what we do? Did it work, the animation? This is a 3-minute animation about what the Sozo Foundation do, just so you get some kind of perspective for who we are, what we do. I'll share one or two stories about what we do, and then we'll pray together. I will cut in enough time for you to go for dinner. Is it working? Lunch.
Welcome to Vrygrond, one of the oldest townships in Cape Town, South Africa. As you drive around Vrygrond, the sights, sounds, and smells of the township are vibrantly alive on each corner. Children laugh and play in the streets. Entrepreneurs open up for a day's trade, and taxis weave in and out of the daily traffic, creating the hustle and bustle of a diverse and resilient community. But ask a local about the problems in the community, and they will soon reveal a darker side to this beautiful place. In the year 2000, 1,600 homes were built to house approximately 8,000 people. Today, NGOs estimate that just over 40,000 people live in this 1 square kilometer. Gangs breed fear and violence. Drugs rob young men and women of hope. With no high school in Vrygrond, young people cross multiple gang territories to learn in overcrowded and under-resourced schools. Disillusioned and with little hope of securing a job, many drop out and never complete their education. Jobs are scarce, and new arrivals are plenty. Houses catch fire easily, and sickness can spread just as fast. But imagine this wasn't the end of Vrygrond's story. Imagine it was possible to help people to know they're loved so they can love others. Imagine if this one simple idea brought a group of people together to dream about the future of this community. If we gathered around the areas of education, skills, youth, and well-being, if we supported young people to complete their education and gave them a hope for their future, imagine if we built an education center right in the heart of the community that could one day become the first high school in Vrygrond. If we equipped unemployed young people with skills, training, and apprenticeships, producing entrepreneurs and skilled employees. Imagine if we gathered unemployed adults and taught them how to grow their own food and sell the excess to generate income. Imagine if we empowered community members with life skills that benefited their entire families. What if the time for imagining was over? Sozo Foundation, a non-profit based in the heart of Vreugde, helping people to know they're loved so they can love others.
So we started in 2013 in two containers, shipping containers. We had two or three shipping containers that were put together. And at that time, we imagined or we wondered what it would be like to build the education center that you saw there. The money that was raised at New Wine and other subsequent funds that came in were used to build the building that you saw with the huge stripes across the front of it. God continued to raise every penny for that building. We owned it outright. And people said to us, why would you build this in the middle of a township? It's a risk for us. We've actually had our building been threatened to be burnt down twice. In gang violence and at times when there's been challenges that we've faced that I've shared with you before. And each time we've been reminded of the prophecies that we've had, of the call that we've had to imagine. People say to us, why would you work with the young people that you're working with? Why would you not go and invest your time in other young people? Or why would you not go and invest your time in other places? Why this 1 square kilometer? And it's because God called us to come and to wonder at what he could do in that special place. I have no idea why. Can't really give you an answer. Why there? Why not? Why didn't someone? It's because it's what God told us to come and wonder. Come and wonder what I could do. Come and see what I could do. Why are you here this morning? Probably because God's positioned you here. God's positioned you here in this specific part of England. There's nothing more amazing just because we're doing it 6,000 miles away. It's funny. People give credit almost for traveling those miles as though it would do. It's the same God. Travel all around the world, and it's the same God that people are wondering at, that are marveling at, that can do the same things, that can do exactly the same things where we are. There was a young man that came to our center. So we had an education, we planted, I suppose, the education center is what we were well known for at the beginning. And you'll be pleased to know we're now up to 95 students that come 4 nights a week, that come at the weekends, that come for tuition, that come for social work support, that get a hot meal. That get advice and help for bursaries. In the area where we work, I know some of you are staying in that are youth. I guess in some of you are 13. If you're 13 years old, are any of you 13? Is there a 13-year-old here? Yeah, don't worry. I'm not going to make you do anything embarrassing. Don't worry. So most of the young people we work with would drop out of school when they're 13. So your age, they would be dropping out of school. They would be leaving high school, meant to complete until they're 18. In the area where we work, they reckon that only around 30% of young people will complete high school. But if you're part of the program and you come to the education center, our class last year, that was the matriculation class, which is our top class, we had a 92% pass rate. Going off to universities as far as Pretoria, accessing bursaries to go there. Our attendance rate, it's not rocket science what we're doing, but we're standing together with them and saying, imagine what we can do if we just wonder what God could do. Why should it always be as it's always been? Why should it be that because you're stuck or you're trapped in poverty that you can't get a great education? Why should it be that you can't come to a great church that would support you, that would pray for you, that we go away on camps? We took 95 young people away on camp. Luckily, I was here in England. It's a hard job going around speaking, but it's even harder to take 95 young people on camp, I can tell you that. And we took them away, and we did a study camp with them, but we study hard in the day. We bring the best tutors in. We bring the best people that we can to inspire them. Then in the evenings, we have amazing worship services where we again look to wonder upon God and wonder what he can do. But then if you figured that when we came last time, we were telling you about the youth cafe that we're going to start working with unemployed young people. We've now been able to work in schools. We've worked with over 600 young people in schools doing employability sessions, encouraging young people to stay in school. We've got a team now. We're 40 staff now. We started and there was only 8 of us. Even when I went out 2.5 years ago, when our family went out, there was only 8 of us working from 3 containers. And we're now 40 staff working across multiple projects in the area. And the Youth Cafe has been an amazing opportunity for us to wonder at what God could do. The government never originally planned to partner with us. We just started it, and we started something. You know, it's easier to ask for forgiveness than it is permission. So we said, well, we'll just start it and see what happens. And we started a program that they'd been running, and we believed God was in it, and that God would do it. And so now we train unemployed young people during the day. So the flow of the center is unemployed young people from the area coming in the day, those that have dropped out from school. It was very reminiscent of the parable where no one comes to dinner. So Jesus says, we'll go out on the streets and invite anybody who would come. We had this program. We didn't know who was going to come. So we went out on the streets during school time when young people should be in school, and we literally went to every corner of the township and just invited people to come on the program where we were. Our first 6 months of this year we've completed, and the second 6 month program where we've just graduated another second, and we've just started our third program. So we're about a year in, we'll be a year and a half in at the end of this program. We're 1 year in now. We had an 82% completion rate on our programs, which is incredible considering none of these young people had finished school. When we did our graduation, everybody dressed in their absolute Sunday best, you know. They had suits on, they were wearing their smartest clothes, and everybody turned up. We packed out a hall of 400 or 500 people. We packed out our church hall. And I thought to myself, this amazing response for a 6 month program. And then young person after young person you spoke to said, I've never completed a course in my life. This is such a big deal for me. I've never been able to do it. I've never completed, never been there. And we've seen about 80% of those. There's a lot of percentages to remember. We've seen about 80% of those go on from being neat, not in education, employment, or training, to now in education, employment, and training. 60 batches of 65 young people. One's gone on to be a craft watchmaker. He makes wooden watches. I went and sat with him in his workshop that get exported from South Africa all over the world. And probably my favorite story from that batch of young people, the one that made me sit and wonder, is a guy called Jean Katasi. Jean had done well at school, actually. He'd completed school, but because of where he came from, the area where he was from, and the reputation the area had, and the lack of jobs that are available in the economy, he'd struggled to find work. So he joined the Youth Cafe program. He was always one of our brightest students. He was such a lovely guy, and he'd done really, really well. And he completed the six-month program with us. He completed his 6 months. And at the end of the 6 month program, he didn't know what he was going to do. And somebody let him down for a job. He'd been promised a job putting up solar panels for boilers. And we trained him to do that in part. And he'd been let down. And then he'd been let down on the Wednesday. And then on the Friday that week, he'd been walking home and he'd gone down the wrong street. And in the street he was walking down just to go to his home, there was a gang fight that was going on. People were shooting. He'd got caught in the crossfire of it. And he was stabbed in his shoulder. He was mistaken for someone who was involved, and he wasn't. And he'd been stabbed in his shoulder, and he'd run away and got a graze right across his arm and his eye. And he came to see me in the office, and he was really, really let down. He felt as though he'd been let down by the business opportunity. He'd felt like he got caught in something that he wasn't involved in. And I had the opportunity just to sit with him and pray. Without a center like this, where do you go? Where do you go? Who do you go to? It's interesting that he came back to us. He came back and we sat and we prayed together. And we really believe God had something for him. And I remember his face. We said, well, only God can turn up now. We must just sit and wait and wonder what God might do. A week later, we got a call from the primary school next to us saying they had bursaries to train teachers to become primary school teachers. But they had to have passed a certain exam. And I knew Jean had passed that exam. I called him and I said, you need to go and apply for this. This would be an amazing opportunity for you. And he walked over the road. And he had teenagers do it here in England. He'd used a razor to cut three lines in his eyebrow, so he looked cool. And I don't know if you think it looked cool, but he thought it looked cool. And he had a stab wound in his shoulder. And he had a plaster over his eye. And the assistant head teacher was kind enough to say to him, I love you and I think you're the right person, but there is no way we can let you see the head teacher while you're looking like this. So she said, it's a school holidays from next week and there's a week, 2 weeks off. She said, so don't come in now, put in your application. She said to him, get better, grow your eyebrows back and come back in for an interview. And now he's working as a trainee teacher in the primary school right next door to the education centre. We've got two young people that have left our centre and are now going on to be primary school teachers in the local community. For us, that makes us stand back, run towards Jesus and be overwhelmed with wonder at what he can do.
when we see the graduation, when we see young person after young person come out. We're close as a church now. We partner, our local church is really at the heart of what we're doing. We'll be close as a church by the end of this year to see an unemployed young person employed every single week. Every single week. We'll have enough young people by the end of the year for it to have averaged out that every single week we'll have seen a young person employed. They get employed in batches, so it's not quite every week. But I thought to myself when I looked at that stat, I thought, what an amazing thing it would be for churches to begin to be able to say every week, on average, we're helping one young unemployed young person in our town get work. We're helping them stay in school. We're helping people turn around their situations. Then I really believe our societies would look to the church and say, we are overwhelmed with wonder. We don't actually know where you're doing it. The government have come back to us and asked about the model. There was a prophecy that said the government will come to you and ask about your model and seek to replicate it. Now, when you're working out of two containers in a real gang-ridden area, in a really tough environment on the Cape Flats, the idea of the government coming in is almost laughable. You think there's absolutely no reason why the government would want to come in. And then recently we got a phone call. We do work in partnership with the government now, and I explained that story last time about the youth cafe. It was an amazing way how it came about. And a minister of social development had his entourage call up and said, the minister is coming and he'd like to show round some officials, and they would also like you to show round some other officials later on. Within 2 weeks, I kid you not, we had 40 officials from the Nigerian government come and look round that building that you saw there. And then we had a visitor from the Minister of Art and Culture and Youth from Brussels come round to meet the South African Minister of Social Development from the Western Cape. And they met in one of our temporary structures, because we've outgrown our building now. They met in one of our temporary structures outside in our car park. And I was in a pair of jeans and a T-shirt. They were all in official suits, all ready for photos. He smiled at me, said, I see you come dressed for work again, as you usually do. I laughed, and they were there. And they did one of those official handing over of, like, gifts. Here's a gift from South Africa. Yes, here's a gift from Brussels. And they all handed over, and the press took photos, and they all crammed in. And the prophecy that was given was, the government will come to you and ask about your model. And we thought, this is ridiculous, you know. When's that ever going to happen? And then they were quizzing each other, the press are there. I'm literally sitting there half asleep. They're doing what they're doing. I'm kind of like, this is fine. It's nothing to do with me. But and then the minister explains about the models that they've got, the things they support in the community, like our building and what we do. And then the minister from Brussels really is trying to pin him and understand. He says, but what's the model? What's the actual model? What are you going to... It's interesting language. Exact the language of the prophecy was they're going to ask about the model. The minister smiled. He said, oh, if you want to understand the model, you need to ask Steve. He invited me to present the model while all the officials are sitting, while everybody's listening, to present our model to what we do. Sometimes when they left, we laughed and we smiled. They wouldn't have known, but we're on volunteers' visas. That's why we need support from churches like yourselves. We can't take a salary in South Africa. We've done that for 3 years. We've never missed a bill payment. We wonder at God sometimes. We wonder. We've never delayed a bill for 3 years. Yet each month we know that it's an act of faith to wait upon who's going to give and what's going to come in. And we need to renew our visas in December. And we were talking internally, oh, it could be a bit tricky, we're not sure how it's going to work. And then just out of nowhere, the official that had been with the minister and showed him around said, I don't suppose you ever have a problem getting visas for overseas people, do you? And we all laughed, said, I don't know, why? And he said, because if you ever do, I mean, this is a wonderful project. We'd obviously give you a letter from the minister as a letter of recommendation. And I smiled and I said, you do know that I'm on a visa, don't you, from overseas? He said, no. You work here, don't you? I said, no, I'm a volunteer. He said, and oh, Steve, I will definitely write you a letter of recommendation. Don't worry. Sometimes you leave and you wonder, wow. This for us was running towards Jesus at the end of the day, overwhelmed with wonder and saying, we can't believe that you would do these kind of things from where we began, from where we started to where we are now. We've been overwhelmed with wonder. And I believe there's two things as I close that, or maybe three things that I believe God would do in this. I believe there's a private place for you to be overwhelmed again with wondering God. I don't want to guess who's followed Jesus for the longest here. But I would imagine whoever's followed Jesus for the longest here has racked up a fair few years. Probably more than I've been alive. I believe even if you followed Jesus 60, 70 years, in the same way as at this, the transfiguration, the disciples are led into something brand new of Jesus, I believe in a private place for all of us, no matter how many years we've followed Jesus, Jesus would want to reveal something that would make you go, wow, wow, that kind of God? Wow. I believe then there'll be moments where God will want to do something where publicly you're able to watch and listen to testimonies, where people will be coming into faith, or where people are being baptized, or where people are launching new projects, or where people are being sent out of the church, where you'll communally then come together, run towards Jesus, be overwhelmed with wonder, and you'll say, wow, this kind of Jesus? This kind of Jesus? And then honestly, and as crazy as it would be as to the guys that prophesied over us in containers to say the community, the government, the structures would then come and look in, I honestly believe that our local churches right across this nation can live in such a provocative way that people would only be able to explain it by the fact that Jesus is involved. They would only be able to explain our lives. They'd only be able to explain our churches. They'd only be able to explain the cross-cultural vibrancy of the UK church by understanding that it's all about Jesus. I honestly believe it. Otherwise, I wouldn't preach. I wouldn't stand up. I wouldn't open the scriptures if I didn't believe that Jesus can continue to cause us to be overwhelmed with wonder, both in the private place where he does amazing miracles, where we're revealed to who he truly is before the Father, like the transfiguration, when he reveals his death, when we know the depth of that, when we understand that, and when he comes to the large crowds and goes out. Wonder is to speculate curiously, to be caught in awe, to be caught in amazement, to be caught in admiration, to marvel, to see something that's curious, strange, surprising, to be astonished, to have admiration, to be puzzled, to see a miraculous deed or an event, and to be present at a remarkable phenomenon. That describes to me perfectly what it means to be a follower of Jesus, to constantly be caught up in wonder, both in your private devotion and in your public outworking of your faith. Our prayer would be that you'd be overwhelmed with wonder. We're so grateful for you for supporting us. We're so grateful for you to allow us as a family to be able to see what Jesus can do with a committed group of disciples in one small square kilometer who would say it's not acceptable that people will live in poverty. It's not acceptable that our young people will be subjected to abuse. It's not acceptable that our young people will be kept out of the best universities. It's not acceptable that our young people won't be able to live with a freedom that is their right in the country that they were born into. It's not acceptable that they'll have to put up with racism any longer. It's not acceptable that they'll have to put up with injustice any longer, because those who wander upon Jesus for long enough will realize that in his strength and with his equipping, we can do something about it. I'll close with a prayer that I stole. I'm not sure if you're allowed to steal prayers, but I did. I stole it from the wall of a prayer house that we regularly pray in. And it summed up for me what I believe God would say to us this morning. Maybe we'll pray it together. I'll pray it, and if you'd like to say amen, you can. It's one of those dangerous prayers. Disturb us, Lord, when we're too well pleased with ourselves, when our dreams have come true because we dream too small, when we arrive safely because we sailed too closely to the shore. Disturb us, Lord, when the abundance of the things we possess cause us to lose our thirst for the waters of life. We've ceased to dream for eternity in our efforts to build a new earth. We've allowed our vision of a new heaven to dim. Disturb us, Lord, to dare more boldly, to venture on wilder seas where storms show your mastery, where in losing sight of land we shall find the stars. We ask you to push back the horizons of our hopes and to push us into the future in strength, courage, hope, and love. I pray this would be your prayer, both with your private devotion to Jesus and your public outworking as a community. In Jesus' name, amen.